You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 267. Welcome to the Punkies Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, the new classic crew. It's not the classic crew because they're all dead, I think, except for me. Or doing other things. It's hard to say. You never know what happens to people. Mr. Ricky Frankel out of Los Angeles.
How's it going? It's been over like a month since I've been on last time.
I know we had Mr. Joel Tannenbaum on here and Mr. Adam Eisenberg and then
Mark Little.
Mark Little.
Tom
yeah.
Crandall, it's been, it Tom Crandall. It has. It's been a while. So I'm glad to be back.
Oh, well, welcome back. And the person we can't get rid of, Mr. John Gentile in Philadelphia.
I'm like genital herpes. I just keep coming back and time and time again.
Kind of sounded like you said general herpes, like.
No, I'm not like, the general kind. I'm specifically genital herpes because they go away.
At one point he was like Lieutenant Herpes, and then at some.
Do you think he's like a really really good military guy, but he always gets passed over for promotion because he's got such a terrible name?
Oh, poor General Herpes. So we got all kinds of stuff that we should be talking about on tonight's show. One that I want to talk about that is the elephant in the room, that the thing that, you know, people that don't actually normally listen to this podcast are probably going to want to hear what we have to say about is John and I guessed it on another podcast, and you guys should go listen to it. So there's a podcast called Everything in the Kitchen Sink that's out there. We've had Nikki on our show before. We've been on her show before to talk about Joe Strummer, but recently she gave John and I the keys to her show and basically said, record whatever you want and put it on my show as long as it's kind of eclectic. So John and I recorded 2 hours and 17 minutes worth of, I don't know, I would say nonsense. It's pretty good.
I stand by our track selection. Like, it's got a flow to it for sure.
Yeah, so we recorded basically a radio show with music, not just with talking like this one. And we tried to do it in a way where we didn't know what the other guy was going to do. So I play a couple songs and John listened to them, and then John played a couple songs, and then we went back and forth and back and forth. And it is really entertaining to me it is. It's long, it's pretty cool. If you go to eatks.net, eatks, everything and the kitchen sink.net, you can find the links to stream the thing there. I don't know if it's up on her iTunes channel yet, but if you are a subscriber of Everything in the Kitchen Sink, you'll get it there too. But hey, if you like listening to me and John talk on here, and I don't know why you would, but if you do and you want to hear us talk slightly less but in a longer recording, then that's definitely where you want to go.
And we played tons of really cool, obscure tracks. And perhaps
we got lewd, John. Like, that show is lewd.
We got extremely rude lewd at one point. We were some lewd dudes, let me tell you. Rude, lewd dudes, let me tell you.
Like there is a whole point where, like, the entire show went into the toilet and song after song about having sex with the devil. And that just happened. It's like someone gave you the keys to their house. And then you went into that house and just did horrible, disgusting things to it. This is what we did to Nikki's show. So anyways, that happened. What else did we do this week, John?
I just want to mention about that. You can hear me get slapped in the intro to that podcast.
Episode. You can. That's super important. What else happened? Oh, we relaunched punknews.org with the new design. But but I mean, hey, let's talk about the rape charges, because that's way more fun. We relaunched punknews.org this week. It has been worked on, like slowly in Aubyn's spare time for what the past year it feels like.
I think like 18 forever. Months. I think like 18 months, honestly.
Yeah, for the longest time possibly and as possible, and it is up now. It is the new look. It's version 6 of the site. For those of you keeping track, the last time we did any significant relaunch or redesign or anything was 2009. So it's been a little while that the site's been kind of on the old design. And I went back and I read some of the articles that we posted when we relaunched the site in past days or in past years, I guess. And every time we did, everyone's like, ah, fuck this, right? So, you know, that's probably that's what happens.
Every time we do anything, everyone's like, ah, fuck this.
Yeah, so in any case, I mean, hey, I mean, I'm well ready for a change, and this change to me is probably the most dramatic one that we've undertaken, specifically because we switched out our comment system, which is going to have a really interesting effect on the kind of like existing Punk News commenter crew that was on there. The people that everyone thinks of as the Punk News readership, you know, the people visibly commenting. So it's going to be interesting to see how they cope and how they react. And like, it's, you know, we basically just napalmed their whole community. So, you know, we preserved all the old comments, but it's a new dynamic. You know, people are going to hop in here with their Discus accounts and comment, and they're not necessarily going to be Punk News account holders when they're doing that. And it's going to be an interesting dynamic.
You can comment on it if you're not a Punk News account person.
Yeah. If you're just a dude on the internet that uses a Discus account to comment on every other website on the world, we're just one you can come comment on now.
Oh, wow.
So it should hopefully open us up a little bit. Get some new people in the mix commenting on stuff.
I know the AV Club uses Discus, and they've got an incredibly vibrant commenting community.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on your community. I mean, like, they're using Discus at the local papers here in Niagara, and it was all just full of, like, the same four or five jagoffs under 17 accounts making horrible, horrible, you know, comments on every single article. So you could absolutely have the whole thing go into the shitter with Discus still. But, hey, it's a different thing for us. You know, John, in gardening, when you want to encourage some new growth, you just got to go out there with a pair of shears and just start cutting things off the tree. Well, that's kind of what we think we've done. So we're excited. It's definitely going to be a work in progress. It's definitely going to be a thing where we adjust and we fix bugs as we find them and we see how things go. Aubyn is a super nerd, even more so than me. So honestly, the things that he's really been focusing on are things that are going to be totally boring to everyone, but it's going to make their lives better, like the performance of the front end and stuff like that. Like, the site loads really fast, and it loads really fast. Like, he's looking at the microseconds of how a page loads compared to how it loaded without a change. So there's been a lot of nerdy stuff under the hood that he's been working on. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. It's a change though. So, you know,
I think it looks pretty cool. It's going to work really well for long form articles, I'll tell you that.
Oh yeah. I mean, if anything, it's going to discourage us from posting like one sentence articles that say like Lagwagon's going on tour, click read more for the dates. Right. Which, on the one hand, means we have to work more. But on the other hand, that's okay.
We're still going to do that kind of stuff, though. Like, we'll still post tour dates and stuff.
Oh, right? Yeah. But, the format will encourage us to maybe, you know, do more with it, eh?
Well, I'm so glad we're bringing in new news editors while I pull back on news. Adam, should we read some – I'm feeling positive. Should we read some positive mail?
We got to have the positive thing go for as long as we possibly can.
Okay.
Because I have a sense, John, that you're going to go down a hole.
Later on. Hey, Punk News Podcast, this is Gorn, long-time listener. I think it's a like reference to Star Trek? I think so. This is Gorn, long-time listener, infrequent commenter, and iced tea and lemonade enthusiast.
And Lizard Man.
Yes. I prefer Lakewood Lemonade, organic cold press, 60% juice and no high fructose corn syrup, and unsweetened tea mixed 80-20. I elevate this class with Arnold Palmer, with vodka known as the John Daly. So I'm probably not a typical kid who reads the site. I'm in my 40s, married, and have a PhD in biology. Unlike the trolls and haters that comment, I enjoy listening to the podcast, whether you're discussing gender issues, Mikey Erg, nihilist Arby's, Chumbawamba, or the intersection of music and culture. Keep up the great work reporting news related to punk rock and the music industry. I've caught a few great shows in New York City this past summer. Toys That Kill, Shell Shag, Swans, Swerve Driver, No FX, and The Melvins. John, why not do a whole episode dedicated to The Melvins? And then Gorn's got a recommendation. Shell Shag is playing at Fest. Not since the Ramones has a band so shaken the very foundations of rock and roll, and punk news should give them some coverage. This husband and wife duo plays infectious pop punk, are instrumental in the DIY scene, and are genuinely nice people. The first time I saw them was in 2009, and the Forgetters and Screaming Females opened. Not too shabby. Thanks, Gorn. So that's Gorn recommending Shell Shag, which I know a lot of people in the kind of where the Indian punk circles cross over, a lot of people are a big fan of that band.
I don't know if I've ever heard that band.
Shell Shag? Yeah, it's very much an East Coast band, I guess. But I mean, I know Screaming Females are very big fans of that band. And a lot of people in the indie, like where indie and punk cross over, that's exactly where that's band's fan base. So.
All right. I'm into this. I'm gonna go check this out.
Well, they
that was a nice letter.
It was. And here's one from Neil. Hello, Adam and John. First, let me say I love the idea of an all Sandinista episode. I'd really like to see where you go with that. I assume the podcast would be sprawling and all over the place as the album is. I remember how horribly disappointed I was when the album came out. I was expecting another London Calling, and what I got was not that. But over the years, I've come to love and treasure it. And let me say, you two have a great chemistry, and the interactions are natural. As you can probably tell, I'm old. 52 years, actually. I'm from England originally, but I have lived in the States since I was 21. I got into punk in the middle of 1977 as a grubby 14-year-old and went to my first show on October 7, 1978, Buzzcocks with the Subway Sect. I still have the ticket. Holy crap, that's coming up on 37 years ago. Anyway, I was lucky to be where I was when I was. I had the good fortune to see The Clash 4 times, The Jam 6 times, The Buzzcocks around 20 times. And I still have my old records, too, which is a bonus. I've got a pretty good collection. All the original Clash singles, all the Buzzcock singles, all the Jam singles, and every Generation X and Adverts release. Anyway, I just wanted to tell you guys that I started listening to the podcast about 3 or 4 months ago. I really appreciate what you both do. Calling yourself a punk rocker at 52 seems strange, but I would still classify myself as that. I still go to shows, though not as often as I would like. And I try to stay current with the scene, although I do find that hard. But I never want to be one of those old bitter ex-punks who sit around and complain about how there are no good bands today and how it was so much better back in the day. F that. Take it easy, guys, and thanks for the entertainment. Signed, Neil.
Cool.
What's going on?
I think...
I'm not mentally prepared to cope with positive feedback to anything in life, so this is weird. Wow. Okay. Cool. Thank you. Thank you to both of you guys who sent letters. That was awesome. I feel really good. Shit. I can play a song related to that. You want to do that?
Let's do it. Let's keep the positivity rolling. Let's go.
All right. So for Neil, this is old hat to you, but maybe for some of our younger listeners, this is not, and this is something that that you haven't heard before. So this is Vic Goddard and the Subway Sect with the single Ambition, released back on, 1979 on Rough Trade Records. So this is the song Ambition, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back. We had some nice mail. We listened to some classic punk rock. And now we do what this show does, which is talk about some horrible thing that's happened.
Yeah, we had some nice mail. Now let's talk about a not so nice mail.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyways, are you going to read not nice mail or are you going to read our horrible story?
No, I mean the horrible that was a pun, Adam. You see, a pun is where someone takes one word that has a meaning and then applies a different meaning to the word because the word sounds similar to the former meaning.
Oh, I see what you did. Mail and mail, like they spelled differently.
Yes, indeed.
Oh. Funny that. You're a joker, John. This is circling back to the story about Samuel North, also known as Sammy Trash Life, the owner of Traffic Street Records.
I believe it's actually Sammy Thrash Life, but...
Sorry, Thrash Life.
Yeah, he sent me a nasty email about how you lowercase the thrash and then uppercase the life. That was his big concern. But go ahead, Adam. Go ahead.
That's not how language works, so... We're going to uppercase the first letter of your last name, dude. Regardless of being guilty or not guilty of anything. That's how we roll here.
That's how we roll.
The harsh grammar judgments of the punk news world. Anyways, if you recall, Sammy was charged with rape. And it was all over the news. It was out in the Chicago Sun-Times. And there was lots of details about the allegations that went against him. The charges have been dropped. The rape charges were dismissed. Judge Adam Bourgeois dismissed the charges at a preliminary hearing. Apparently, the decision for dismissal hinged on the alleged victim's actions following the alleged incident. You can find a link to the full story over on Punk News. The full story is over at the Chicago Sun-Times. John, before we get into your opinion here, you're the legal scholar. Among us, can you explain why these charges were dismissed?
Yes. I'm not a criminal attorney, so I'm not an expert in this area. I'm not an expert in this area of the law. However, when you get charged with a crime, when you originally get charged with a crime, you go in front of a grand jury, and you don't even necessarily have to be there. At a grand jury, a jury decides whether or not that the court should actually press charges on you if the prosecutor thinks they should press charges. Once a grand jury decides that they should press charges, then you go in front of the judge. Then the judge looks at the evidence, and the defendant's attorney can move to have the case dismissed for lack of evidence against you or lack – any number of reasons. So this was the type of hearing right when the case gets started, maybe even at his entry of appearance where he says guilty or not guilty, his attorney brought a motion saying all the evidence you have, you don't have enough to go forward, or the evidence that you have is self-contradictory, so it's against due process to go forward with this lawsuit. I mean, not this lawsuit, this criminal charge. So you should dismiss it immediately. The judge looked at the evidence and either saw that the evidence was conflicting or that there wasn't enough probable evidence to go forward with a case and dismiss the case.
All right, John, that's your legal read. You have an opinion.
I do. First of all, we were fair on the website and we'll be fair on the Punk News podcast. We mentioned this guy got charged with rape. Then we mentioned that he denied it. And now we're mentioning that the court dismissed the charges. So he was found not guilty of the charges. So usually my bullshit detector is right, and I'm not going to necessarily one way or another, but I still think my bullshit detector is right on this one. Here's what I'm going to say is this guy is – the court found him not guilty of rape, so you can take that however you like. He's not guilty of rape. However, the point is this is on – he's got his website how he's into violent sex, how he likes to choke girls, how he likes to hit girls or whatever when he's having sex with them, how he likes to be rough to girls when he's having sex with them. This is a guy that has sex with 19-year-old girls in his van even though he's 29, you know, drives around the country having sex with random girls when he's 19. Listen, people, I know we're in an age of sex positivity and that kind of thing, and Ricky or Adam, do you ever read Savage Love by Dan Savage, the love and sex columnist? He's in The Onion.
No.
I read him, and basically his central thesis, I guess, if you will, is that if two people consent to anything, then they can do whatever they want. I disagree with that in this area. What I'm going to say is this, is if you're the kind of guy that likes to choke women, that likes to smack women, that likes to do any of this while you're having sex with it, even if it's, quote, consensual, you're a shitbag and you're a piece of shit and you're a scumbag. There is no healthy reason whatsoever a guy should ever want to hurt a girl in any context. I don't care if it's violent sex or whatever. If you have those kinds of drives or desires, then you need to go get yourself checked out because you're a scumbag and you are not a healthy person and you're hurting other people and you're just trash. Your life is trash. That's what I'm saying. If you like to have, quote, violent sex. And if you're a girl, and this is my advice, if you're a girl and you got a boyfriend or a husband or whoever and he likes violent sex and it's consensual or whatever, let me tell you, any guy that likes violent sex, that likes to choke girls, that likes to smack girls, he's not a healthy guy. He's got severe, deep problems, and you should run from that relationship and disassociate yourself with them. I mean, for real, if I'm with a naked girl, the last thing I'm thinking about doing is smacking her around. Adam White, true? True?
Yeah, true.
Ricky, true?
I mean,
true, but I have a question.
Yeah.
What if it's the person that's getting smacked that actually likes getting smacked?
Then they got issues. They need to sort that out. That is no way a healthy relationship. And if you have those desires and you like getting hit, then you need to see somebody because that is not a healthy way to go about life. You should never want anyone, especially your boyfriend or your husband or someone that supposedly cares about you, should want to cause you physical harm. That's a real problem. And I know a lot of sex columnists would disagree with that, but I feel extremely strongly any guy that wants to hurt a girl is like physically is a piece of shit.
Well, I mean, I just asked because there's a huge. I mean, you've been in Northern California before. There's like that whole was it the Folsom Street Fair, which is just, you know, it's a huge expression of sexuality. Not only is it, you know, LGBT people, but it's also sadomasochist people that love getting whipped and the crap kicked out of them.
Well, true. I don't necessarily think that is healthy, to tell you the truth, but I think like with the S&M guys where they like getting spanked or whatever, that's a little different than what's called, quote, violent sex, where people get choked and smacked, you know?
No, they blur together.
They probably do. I'm not into any of that, but I'm saying
me either, but I you know,
if you like getting spanked or whatever, I mean, that's not the end of the world, but any guy that wants to hurt a girl, any guy that gets off on hurting a girl is a messed up dude, and he's got severe problems. Adam, what you were going to say something.
I was going to just kind of bring up what Ricky did there. Like I think there's a line here between like BDSM or like kink stuff, you know, the stuff that Fat Mike is so publicly into these days. Right. There's a difference between that and, you know, you getting off by causing someone pain.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying that you know what, if you have a consensual, you know, relationship where you guys like to, you know, dress up in leather and tie each other up and whatever, then fine. You know, that's your prerogative. That's cool. I think that the line here is when, like, you know, you enjoy hurting someone and it's, you know, and it's not. Yeah. What you said. I'm cool with this. I'm cool with this. I'm a little bit less harsh because I don't want to harsh anyone's
harsh anyone's mellow.
Buzz, right? But you know,
I'm just saying, any guy that's slapping a girl, any guy that's choking a girl, anything like that, if you're a girl, run from that guy. He's messed up. That's what I'm saying.
All right, cool. Yeah.
So I think
where this story is going to end for us. I don't know if we're going to bring this one up too much anymore.
He was saying, I'm going to provide all the court documents to Punk News so people know exactly what happened. Listen, it's not our job to vindicate this guy. I think we did our fair duty, and honestly, I don't want to mention him anymore. It's not like we've had other similar scenarios where people were like, yeah, you know, it wasn't true. I understand what happened, but, you know, it wasn't true. I'm just trying to make the best of it. This guy was kind of a dick, you know. Of course, I've never been in this situation. Of course, I wouldn't be in a situation because I wouldn't be banging 19-year-old girls and choking them and slapping them, you know. But, right. you know, I can understand if a person gets falsely accused of rape, but I don't want to cover this guy anymore. That's what I'm saying.
Well, now, just one thing that I found interesting about the article that was written about him. I was surprised that they got dropped. I thought, like, his past behavior, he's been in and out of drug rehab for heroin a lot. But what I found absolutely fascinating, and I know I told you, John, but off the podcast, but he went to Georgetown Law School.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
that's
even know if
crazy to me.
I don't even know if I believe that. I mean, we'll just briefly mention this. His stories that he went to Georgetown Law, skipped all his classes, but he still graduated. If you go to law school, you are required to attend a certain number of classes. It's like you can only miss like two per semester, and that's a state requirement and a federal requirement for an accreditation of law school. Basically, if a law school has students not attending, then that law school can lose its accreditation. So I don't believe him. You know, but I don't care. I don't care. I mean, honestly, I don't care about this guy except that I don't like him personally. I mean, I've never met him, but I still don't like him personally, and I don't want to talk about him anymore.
All right. Okay. Well, let's move on to something that we actually want to talk about here.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ricky, Ricky, this is the band you've been championing on here for a while, so I'm going to let you take this one.
You don't understand how fucking stoked I was when I heard about this coming out. I have this is Pairs released their Letters to Meemaw. And they're streaming it over at Dying Scene. The 7-inch came out earlier this month. Goddamn, I love this. I reviewed it 9 out of 10 for me because these are just two songs that are just it's Pairs taking their original sound from Go to Prison and pushing themselves a little bit. You could hear Snowflake, the A side on that Fat. What's it called? That Fat Records comp that came out earlier in the summer, and then the B side.
Is it Harder, Fatter, Louder? Is that this one or is that the last one?
I'm blanking on the name right now.
The last Fat comp. Everyone knows it.
Yeah, the last Fat comp. And then the B side is a brand new song, which I think they're playing live. I heard them play it live fairly recently. It's called Anhedonia, and this is such a heavy song, but you can see they've really come into their own sound here. Especially this is cool because this is their first release on Fat Records, other than Fat reissuing Go to Prison. Now I could go on. This band's kind of my Melvins. So where'd that go? So John. What did you think of the songs?
I thought they were cool, man. I'm liking Pairs more and more that I hear them. I think the tunes are basically kind of the next step from the LP, rather, this single. I'm very curious to see what they're going to do on the Fat record because, I mean, another band that kind of had a similar trajectory to Pairs was Masked Intruder. They don't sound like each other, but Masked Intruder was on a smaller label. They signed a Fat re-released the album, and you know there's a lot of hype, a lot of build up behind that record, and they put out a second record on Fat. The issue with Masked Intruder is I think they kind of just did the same thing as on their second record as they did on the first, so they lost a lot of their steam. So I'll be curious to see if Pairs does Pairs Part 2, or if they do something weird or unusual on the second release. I'd like to hear something weird or unusual mixed with some of their more standard hardcore tracks.
I have a feeling. That's where they go. That's where I hope they'll go. Adam, what about you?
I'm into this. I feel like I've only listened to like any of the Pairs stuff once or twice each. So I still don't have – I have more of a sense of like what they sound like as opposed to individual songs at this point. But I'm impressed, and I'm really interested in hearing what this record, the full length that's coming out, I guess, what that is actually going to end up sounding like. And actually there was a really interesting fact that popped up on Damian Abraham's podcast, Turned Out a Punk, where he interviewed
Aaron Burkett.
Aaron Burkett from Fat Records. And she said that Pairs was the only band that Fat has ever signed without seeing them live.
I mean, I don't have you either of you seen them live?
I have not.
Okay. No. I mean, it's an incredible show. You even get blown away by their performances. Just if you look them up on YouTube, they're so, you just see Zach go into this, their lead singer, just go into this like completely different world. And just the whole band just has such good chemistry and works the crowd really well. What else was I going to say? In terms of go to prison, I mean, for me, there's been so much replay value on that album, and I was finding something new on there like every time. So I really
It's pretty dynamic. That was the thing that hit me when I first started listening to it. I was like, wow, this band kind of goes all over the place. This is really interesting, because that's the kind of thing where like you hear bands like that, and when they're really young, that's maybe a little bit of evidence that they're just like super frenetic and all over the place. But that's the kind of thing that matures into something really interesting. Where you know, they start to like take all of these like wacky directions and like craft a sound out of that. Like that, I'm looking forward to hearing that, because you know that a lot of good bands have starts like that. So,
and I think we're starting to get that signal from them that's happening, especially from this EP. But yeah,
Paris,
awesome. Go see them. I think they're going to be touring with Lagwagon later this year, I think like in November.
I'll tell you, speaking of the hype train and Fat just signing up all the hot bands these days, Nightbirds. Everyone that listens to Punk News knows we love Nightbirds. I'm a huge Nightbirds fan. Adam White's a huge Nightbirds fan. I think Ricky's a huge Nightbirds fan now.
Yes.
They put out a new video for Mutiny at Muscle Beach off the new album called Mutiny at Muscle Beach. The album's out, week after next, super soon, man, October 2nd. Ricky, what'd you think of the video? What'd you think of this tune?
I mean, for me, like this is one of my most anticipated albums of the year. This is the third song that they've released from this album so far. Of the three, this is my favorite by far. And I'm really interested to hear how they use CJ Ramone on this album. I don't know if you guys noticed on the video, which is awesome, but I don't know if you guys noticed the list of people in the background.
I did not.
It had like Aaron, Mike, and a bunch of people that like were next to be killed or something like that. It was actually a very clever and very cool video that they.
Oh, I see.
I'm
looking at it. I'll read it to people right now. I see it right now. The list says.
I think it's like the band members
there
and then
go.
Like
PJ, Brian, Derek, and Joe. That's the guys in the band. Then Chad, Bart, Pat, Tim, Aaron, and Mike.
I'm pretty sure Aaron and Mike are just, you know, Fat Mike and Aaron from Fat Records.
Oh, Pat is Pat from Fat. I don't know who Tim is. Don't know who Bart is or Chad.
But yeah, I love this song. The intro was very, very not like them. It's kind of like this soft, like echoey thing, and then it just, oh my god! Then when those chords ring out, it goes da na na, and I love this song.
How's it go,
it's
Ricky?
Da na na, right?
Wait, how's it go?
Okay, I'm not doing this. Adam, what do you think?
Does it go da na na? Is that Adam? How's it go?
So. Can we take this this one note that Ricky has sang and loop it and make something out of it?
I think we need to make one of those like YouTube videos that were like popular like a year, like 2 years ago, where it's like just like one like the Intruder song or something.
You know, I'm starting to realize that even trying to become an editor, you still get the hazing from you two.
It's not so much hazing as as brotherly ribbing, I would say.
That's fine. That's fine. But yeah, I don't care. Do what you want. Adam, what'd you think? I'm sure you love this.
Yeah, I do. You know, it's not, it sounds like Nightbirds, which is amazing. It's a new Nightbirds song, which is amazing. I haven't heard this record yet. The rest of you, I think, may have, but we won't talk about that. So I'm really looking forward to just sitting down and just listening to this record. I almost don't want to hear anything else from it. I just want the thing to... as a whole, so I can do that. So we'll see.
Oh, I have one thing to add. I don't know if you guys noticed, I don't know if either of you pre-ordered it from the Fat Wrecker website, but I thought they did kind of an interesting pre-order that you could get it on. It's a rare cassette release from Fat, which they don't get anymore. And then they're going to be, and the, like, Fat does, like, their limited, like, color pressing or whatever of a new record. This time around, they did just 100, they did, I guess they're just doing black, but it's 180 gram vinyl with alternative album art. And I'm really curious to see what that album art is, because the current one is really good.
Hmm. I've got the alternative album art from the record release show on the last record. If you get a chance to go see the Nightbreed record release show, it's awesome. I saw the last one at Golden Tea House. It was so awesome, man.
Did they do this song?
At the record release show?
Yeah.
No, this is from like 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Because I know they're doing other record release shows with like Dillinger Four or something.
Yeah, there's like three or four records. I'm going to go to the, I think they're doing one in Brooklyn or something. So, yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, this was a lot of good fat bands that we like.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, like Fat is killing it lately, aren't they, Adam White?
Fat is Fat's killing it. Fat's having their anniversary, and I mean, you know, coming back to what I was saying earlier about that Turned Out a Punk show that Pink Eyes from Fucked Up does. Like go listen to his interview with Aaron. Like every time I hear anyone from Fat talking about Fat, like my respect grows for what they do. So all the love to Fat Records.
You never hear anybody talking bad about Fat that was on Fat. You know, that's every record label has someone saying something bad about them except Fat. You know, so
I actually heard another interview. It was around the time Damien also interviewed Fat Mike, but it's some Canadian station, and yeah, you know,
Canadian culture show up here called Q, and
yeah, that's it.
Was that the other violent sex guy, Q?
Well, yeah, that it was Gian Gameshi's show, which has since been. It's like, so the show was taken away from Gameshi when all the violent sex stuff happened with him, and then it went into it rotated through at least half a dozen guest hosts kind of like for half a year. And actually one of those guest hosts, coincidentally enough, was Damien from Fucked Up. He hosted it for a while. And then they have settled on their new host is a hip hop guy from Toronto named Shad. And so Shad hosts the show now and he's good. But anyway, so Shad just interviewed Mike. And Mike was on the show, and that can actually be found online too. We'll put links to that in the show notes as well. But yeah, so Fat Mike was on Q.
Well, I was going to answer what John was asking about, like why everyone loves Fat. It's because they don't. You hear Mike talk about their business, like ethics, and they're very, very. They could be screwing people over if they like quote unquote screwing people over if they really wanted to, but they don't. They treat everyone really like a family. And
see, I get mad when people say like oh, you're entering a business relationship with somebody, and like, oh, we're like family. Like I find that insulting to both me and my family, because we might be friendly business associates, but we're not friendly. You know what, I hate that.
I gotta tell you though, it seems like from the way he was saying it, like they don't really do it's a very casual thing that's kind of built on, I guess, the honor system. There's really not much of a contract that's written up between Fat and the bands they sign. It's a very respectful business relationship over there, and they don't. I mean, they really have like an ethic there that treats everyone with just decency and I want to say friendship. Pretty much, it's more like a friendship than a partnership almost. That's coming from Mike, though.
Hey, when do you guys think we get our Cadillacs?
Like from Fat?
Yeah, we're talking about Fat so much.
Well, we got to talk about labels that have more money than give us Cadillacs.
You know what's great about Epic Records? They treat you like family.
Yeah. Oh, Ricky. Speaking of friendship and loveliness and flowers and everything, play us a song.
Okay, so this there's a band out of Denver, Colorado called All Out Helter. They put out an EP out, I guess. It must have been it was during the summer, so it was a few months ago. It's called Ruins. I reviewed it. I thought it was very good. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. And this is just kind of one of those bands I kind of found after I did that review of the Class of 86 album. And yeah, so it's good. And the bands are kind of related in sound. Kind of, I kind of compared them to some, I guess, almost propaganda-ish kind of Class of 86 and a little bit of Wilhelm Scream. So I'm going to play the title track off the Runes EP. You can check them out on Facebook, the All Out Helter Bandcamp, and they're on Twitter too. So this is Runes by All Out Helter.
Crawl out of halls and climb out of basements and take your first steps out into the wastelands. Should have been the land that I forgot. We can't reclaim it. The land that turned to rocks. The last remaining evidence of the existence of man. He shaped his world with stone and steel. Watched it turn to sand. It slipped right through our hands. Rise up, reclaim your ruined earth. Destroy, rebuild again.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to circle back to a story that we've talked about really at length in one of our recent episodes, but there's been a new development in it. And not only this, but a lot of comings and goings regarding this band right now that that we'll try to touch on. So as you may recall, there's a band from Calgary, Alberta named Viet Cong. They had a whole bunch of controversy recently because they're called the Viet Cong. And they specifically where all this kind of stemmed from was back in March. They had a show that was scheduled at Oberlin College, and that show was canceled on them because they decided that the promoter had decided that the band's name was offensive, and he didn't want to bring that kind of onto a college campus. Well, the band has since then been embroiled in various controversies about this. In particular, up here in Canada, the heat was on them for the past few weeks because Viet Cong were long listed for the Polaris Music Prize, which is a $50,000 music prize that basically a group of rotating kind of like coast to coast to coast music journalists in Canada get together and decide.
Did you vote? You said we.
I said we. No, I'm not. Oh. I'm not a voting member of the Polaris people. But Punk News people have been in the past.
Really?
Ben Connolly. Ben Connolly, who is a writer for us, actually might be coming back to write some vinyl columns for us soon. But anyways, Ben, who lives out in Fredericton, New Brunswick, was on the Polaris, one of the juries, one of the whatevers, a few years ago. I don't remember who won the year he did, was on there. But past winners of Polaris have included Fucked Up. This is kind of like the highest critical music honor in Canada right now. It's not tied to sales or anything. Polaris just happened. And Viet Cong was longlisted, and then they made it onto the shortlist. So there was a real possibility that for the band's self-titled record, which was released this year, they could have become the most acclaimed critical band in Canada this year and gotten a bunch of money and everything. So when all this was happening, you know, the name controversy had never gone away, and it really got to a boiling point over the past few weeks because all of the attention was on these, you know, handful of bands that were vying for the Polaris Prize. There was a couple articles that were posted that really kind of like kicked up a bunch of shit about the band. They're both posted on the same day, actually. The one that was the major one, the most important one, was one that went up in the Canadian music magazine Exclaim. And this article, I'm going to pull it up here.
Not yours to play with. Viet Cong's name offends. Hooded Fangs, April Alarmo on community racism appropriation of neighbors' culture.
Yeah, okay, that's what it is. So anyways, this was written by April of the band Hooded Fang, and she it is a long, in-depth kind of teardown over the band's over the band's use of the name, over why it's considered, why it's considered controversial, why it's considered offensive by the Vietnamese community. It pulls in, her family's personal history. It pulls in stuff from the kind of the Vietnamese diaspora in Canada and elsewhere. So it really kind of gets into it and starts to look at it from a, starts to spin it from like a, is this an issue of, you being controversial to be controversial, or is this an issue of like cultural appropriation? So anyways, it's a really interesting article. You should give it a read, depending, kind of regardless of what side of this you come down on. The other article that brought up the band and put even more attention on them was the whole Polaris Prize thing had a little bit of last minute controversy that was kicked up. There is a media affairs programmer, a media watchdog podcast and news website up here called Canada Land, and they published an expose from an expose is not really the right word. They published an article that was written by one of the people that was on the Polaris jury, and that basically went and took a bunch of various screenshots of kind of like the internal secret message board where all these music journalists in Canada were debating over who was going to win Polaris. And, he had certain grievances about the way that was conducted. And he went and he posted a big public article that kind of like, blew the door open on that private group. And, Hooded Fang was of course part of the discussion with that. But all sorts of other, it was a weird day in Canada on Twitter, let me tell you, where you had a lot of music journalists and musicians and everything, sniping at each other about this. So it was interesting. We'll link it up in the story here. Long story short, though, all this controversy was kicked up. Viet Cong has, for the most part, remained silent about it until now. And they have gone and they have announced that, yes, they are going to change their name. A new name has not been selected. And what they have said basically is, I'm just going to read a little bit out of their statement here. They said, art and music are about creative expression. However, our band name is not our cause. We are not going to fight for it. This is not what the band is about. There are many individuals more eloquent than us who have recently had a lot to say about the topic of our name and the appropriation of the name Viet Cong. For more insights into the arguments, we encourage you to read some of these. We are a band who want to make music and play music for our fans. We are not here to cause pain or remind people of atrocities of the past. The truth is, we are planning to change the band name for the next record for months. It has not been an easy decision to make. We are a band of four people with four individual voices. This debate has been long and difficult for us, and it has took a long time for everyone to settle on a course of action. We don't know what the name of the band will be, but we owe it to our fans to honor the concerts that we have booked. We rushed into our last band name decision. We don't plan to rush into this one. Anyway, so you'll find more of that statement that they have on our website. John, you were super heated about this issue when we last talked about it. Given all this that's come out, what do you think?
I'm still super heated, and I'm becoming extremely depressed by this.
Why so?
People are making the following fatal flaw, and this is fatal, and this is detrimental to art, detrimental to society, detrimental to critical and independent thinking. It is not art's job to be moral. It is not art's job to teach you lessons. It is not art's job to make you feel good. Art can do those things if it wants, but it is not art's job to be Aesop. It is a teacher's and an instructor's and an educator's job to make people feel good and feel safe and feel good about themselves and make sure they don't feel bad. It is specifically art's point to make interesting comments that can be made outside of an education or moral context. It is specifically art's point to address things that are unpleasant that might be interesting and educational and informative and stimulating to look at. We now, as a society, are insisting that our artists always say the exact right thing, always say a certain thing in a limited range of thought, and that our artists never be bad guys, never be the bad guys, always say the right thing. And further, we are stumbling like idiots, like knuckleheads, down an incredibly slippery and inclining slope. So you can't name a band called Viet Cong because the real Viet Cong were bad guys. Although if you ask some people, the Viet Cong weren't bad guys. But for some reason, because we're on the Western Hemisphere, the Viet Cong were bad guys. I'm not taking a stance on who the actual Viet Cong were, mind you. I'm just saying this is arbitrary in of itself. If you go over to some parts of Vietnam, people say the Viet Cong were the good guys. You see, this is idiotic. But further, we're falling down an incredibly deadly and slippery slope that is the destruction of art and flies in the face of everything that guys like Hubert Selby Jr., guys like Lenny Bruce, guys like Richard Pryor fought so hard for in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I don't know, and it's because people are wimps these days. I mean, if we have to ban the name Viet Cong, how about Joy Division? Because that's about, sex slaves during World War II. Should we ban the name Joy Division? Well, how about New Order? Because that's appropriating a Nazi term, okay? How about the Stranglers? Because people know people that got strangled. So if you hear the name Stranglers, you might think of someone you know that got strangled. How about GWAR? Should we force GWAR to stop killing people on stage? Because people know people that got killed. People that got killed in war. People that got killed by murderers. Or people that overdosed and GWAR does a lot of drugs on stage. There's absolutely no difference between requiring Viet Cong to change their name because it reminds some people of some bad things and suggest to people that you can't use your own mind and critical thinking to realize that they're commenting on the name and not just saying, boy, weren't the Viet Cong great. There's no difference between that and GWAR. None at all. There's no difference between that and Alice Cooper. There's no difference between that and Kiss. There's no difference between that and the Rolling Stones singing Brown Sugar, okay? It is not art's job to always portray the view of the good guy. And as I've said before, one of art's fundamental virtues is that it can explore concept from the bad guy's perspective, from the unsavory perspective, from the critical thinking perspective, so we can learn more about that in order to understand it and also to perhaps combat against it if we want. The shackles that we are placing around art just so people don't feel bad makes me want to vomit and it makes me want to scream. It really makes me want to scream. And I sound like a broken record. I've been saying this over and over and over again, but sometimes I feel like I'm the only person shouting at a wall and everyone else is just going along like sheep because they don't want to, quote, make people feel bad. If art isn't making people feel bad, art isn't doing its job. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I was on the podcast when the whole issue at the, when they tried playing the college broke out. And I'll say it again. I mean, this is, college campuses, especially now, you cannot do what John is saying. You can't, because especially college campuses are incredibly politically correct to the point where they're strangling art, freedom of speech, different points of view, the whole thing. And I'll say this again, bands, if you can help it, don't play college campuses. Comedians too, it's getting bad. And I have family members that are in college right now that are in charge of the entertainment that comes on campus, and it's being talked about that, you know, comics should censor their material, even though college campuses were traditionally the most the best place for them to try out new material. And I would avoid those kinds of venues at all costs. That's about all I got.
You know what? The one thing I kind of feel for here, and this is, I agree with you guys largely. I'm not gonna really take the other side of that. But the one thing that I'm curious about with this story, and I kind of got this impression from the band's statement, and from this is a band that, like, you know, despite the fact that they're performers and they're on stage, they're very. They seem like they have shied from being in the press all that much. And I really wonder if, like, that this whole band name thing is something that has gotten away from them, and that they did not at all, like, they picked the name because it sounded kind of cool, and it,
because, you know, it stimulates interesting thinking and critical thinking. That's why.
Well, I wonder if it was even that. Like, I wonder if they picked this name based on, like, you know, we're going to be Viet Cong, right? And it sounded cool to them, so they're going to be Viet Cong, right? And, you know, it was like a 10-minute decision made over some beers where everyone said, like, all right, that sounds good. And now, all of a sudden, you know, they released a record that everyone agrees – well, I don't know if I've heard the record. I don't know if I agree with this. But lots of music critics in Canada agree is a very good record. And all of a sudden, the band is just like, you know, dragged into this name controversy that I don't know if they're necessarily – I want to say they don't have the stomach for, like, it'd be one thing if, like, you went to the Dead Kennedys and said, you guys can't be called Dead Kennedys. Or if you went to, you know, New Order and said, you can't be New Order. And, like, those bands could turn around and say, like, oh, yeah. And then, like, they have a reason why they chose those names. I wonder if Viet Cong didn't have much of a reason. And at one point, and now they're just at the point where they're just like, you know what, whatever, fuck it. We're going to be called the Jimmies. We don't care.
The Jimmies.
Right. Like, we don't give a shit about this. This is not what we were trying to do. Like, I'm wondering if, you know, for all the talk about, like, you know, artistic statements and the role of art and everything, I'm wondering if they picked this name in a decidedly non-artistic way, in a way that they didn't really care all that much. And now they're kind of stuck with this controversy that they have to deal with.
Yeah, I agree. From their statement, it seems like they're not even saying that they're wrong in their statement. They're kind of just saying, we don't want this battle, is what they're saying. You know?
Yeah, I think they're just kind of, I'm trying to get away from this. I don't know if you guys saw the I don't mean to go too off topic, but I don't know if you guys saw the South Park episode of last week. And it touched upon how political correct culture is just ruining everything. So if you get a chance, watch that. It's actually very relevant, but if you guys didn't see it, we can move on.
We don't have TV in Canada.
I'm just disgusted at society. Let's talk about something that makes me happy. This makes me incredibly. And actually, though, when I'm at punk shows and at this specific controversy, I seem to be in the extreme minority. But writers have podcasts at Punk News. I'm interested in the kids' opinion. I mean, am I really the extreme minority, or does it just seem that way and that just the loudest people are the opposite view? I don't know. I couldn't say. Writers podcast at punknews.org. But let's talk about something that makes me happy. Jesse Michaels is releasing a new short film. This one's going to be serious, and it's going to be called Rip Off. It's going to be a crime story that takes place in a fictional LA where every single person is a low-budget hustler. In case you didn't know, Jesse Michaels has done a couple of other short films. One was called Horizon Bastard, which if you haven't seen Horizon Bastard, just go to YouTube and put in Horizon Bastard. I love it. I think Jesse Michaels did a blog post where basically he said he's not going to do much music right now. He's going to do film, writing, and art. And honestly, I'm disappointed that he's not going to do music. But if a guy like Jesse Michaels, if he's not going to make – if he doesn't want to do music, then you don't want him to make music because he's the kind of guy that hits it out of the ballpark every single time. And that's because he only follows his muse. So I'm excited for this video, this short film. I support Jesse Michaels and any of his art because I think pretty much every art Jesse Michael does ranges from great to amazing. So I'm excited. Adam White, man, what's happening up there in Canada?
Oh, all the bands are uniting for a little while and then maybe not. We just had our Riot Fest up here. I didn't go to Riot Fest because I'm not cool. But there was a lot of cool stuff at Riot Fest. You know, I'm a little bit jealous now that I missed it. But one of the things that happened there was Alexis on Fire played a show. Alexis on Fire being the post-hardcore band that was from my area, from St. Catharines, Ontario, which has since kind of spun off the rather massive City in Color band since they've split up. But anyways, so Alexis on Fire, they've gone and they've reunited. They played a few kind of high-profile festival gigs around Canada and the U.S., and I believe they were at Reading and Leeds in England. Anyways, they played Riot Fest. While on stage, Mr. Wade McNeil, Mr. Dirty Black Lungs of the Alexis on Fire band, was quoted saying, "Thank you for sticking with us. We promise to never leave you again. No more sentimental shit. Alexis on Fire is officially back." And then, you know, everyone, us included, went out and said, "All right, Alexis on Fire is officially back." Then the band went onto their Facebook page, probably after smacking Wade up the head, and said, no, we're back in that, like, we all talk now and don't hate each other, but we still have, you know, all of the kids and lives and jobs and other bands that we did prior to us reuniting, so don't expect an album or a tour or anything anytime soon. Anyways, so yeah, that's what they said. That was not their actual quote. I completely paraphrased that because I don't have it in front of me. But, you know, they walked it back. Yeah, here we go. I'll read you the actual thing so it's not my shitty reading of it. They said, "What Alexis on Fire is back does mean is that the five of us are all back in each other's lives and are as good friends now as we've ever been. If we're lucky, we'll see you out there again. thank you for sharing in the moment with us. So anyways, there you go. So that's all that there is. So Alexis on Fire may play shows soon, but they may not, and they probably won't. This is very much the same way that like the Constantines are reunited right now, and that like they play a few shows a year over the past year, but there has not been a you know, massive tour or new record or anything like that. So there you go. If you're a fan of Alexis on Fire, I guess that gives you some hope, but you know, don't hold your breath.
Adam, are you big? I know Canadians love this band. Are you into this band? Are you a fan of this?
I am a latter day sort of convert to this band. They play music that appeals to younger people than me. And when I was younger, I'd always kind of lumped them in with that kind of like screamy mall emo kind of thing. And like, I remember just specifically like their first record before anyone knew who they were, when it was just a quasi independent kind of release. But it was in all the record stores in Niagara because they were a local band. And, you know, I remember seeing it and remember the kind of people that were really, really into that. And they were, you know, when you get kids that are like a couple years younger than you and they're all into something, you're like, fuck those kids. Right. So there was a bit of that. And then honestly, I didn't really get into them all that much, but Wade McNeil, the guitar player of the band, who is the new singer for Gallows, actually, Wade had a punk band called Black Lungs, I really like. And they played as kind of like fast, you know, 77 style punk, and they're really good. And I saw them live once and I was really, really stoked on it. And it made me a little bit more open when the latter couple Alexis records came out. So I actually like Old Crow's Young Cardinals, which is the last record that they had come out. But there was this thing that happened to Alexis on Fire where they, I think like as that kind of sing screamy, you know, emo thing started to wane, the band got gruffer. Like they went and they started listening to a lot of Hot Water Music or something like that. And like there was this gruffness that emerged in their sound. And I was totally cool with that. So yeah, their last record and the EP that followed it, I'm good with. I would listen to one of those and not feel ashamed of myself. Their earlier stuff, it might be okay. And maybe I wrote it off, but it's just from a different time and I wasn't in the place, and they were local. So I had baggage about it.
This band is pretty huge with the punk news kids, although I know nothing about them, you know, but
yeah, I'm kind of,
no, I mean, I feel like I unfairly maligned them for a long time. but like a lot of the stuff that they have done since is all stuff like that to me seems like there's like perfectly reasonable things. Like Dallas Green went on to form City in Color, which is just like a singer-songwriter project really, but it's huge in Canada, like massive. Dallas just did a duet record with Pink, the pop star.
Yeah. Fun fact. Did you know that Tim Armstrong, like basically,
yeah, he wrote for her.
Not only did he write, like basically the first Pink album or whatever is almost a Rancid record. It's got like all the Rancid guys on it. And like almost all the songs are co-written with Tim Armstrong. I didn't realize I thought she used one of his songs. He's like the central producer behind that album.
Yeah, she seems to associate with a lot of punk people, which is interesting. So, but anyway, so but City in Color is a pretty massive band up here. So they have a huge career. You know, all the guys have gone on and kind of like done stuff that is cool, is perfectly respectable stuff. So, you know what, they at some point moved from being like this band that to me represented like the local screamo kids, and I don't mean screamo in a good way, I mean screamo in like a early 2000s way, right, to all of a sudden being a band that like I'm like, I kind of respect these guys, you know, I'm cool with them, I'm good. So it's weird, it's just the thing that I've had to cope with, is that like, you know, You think you're a big shot cynical asshole, and then maybe you shouldn't be.
All right. Speaking of guys that are not big shot cynical assholes, let's close out this podcast with a legend that has influenced Madness, The Clash, The Slits, you name it. This guy was hugely influential in the UK early punk scene. Max Romeo, reggae legend. Of course, you might know, you might not know, Max Romeo recorded an amazing, amazing pinnacle reggae album called War in Babylon, produced by Lee Scratch Perry. And it's an amazing record. Well, he's working on a new record with Daniel Boyle. Who's Daniel Boyle? Daniel Boyle is a pretty highly respected UK reggae producer who previously recorded an album with Lee Scratch Perry. Well, they're working together to release a new album, and it's going to have a lot of the original Jamaican guys on it. Glenn DeCosta of the Upsetters and Bob Marley's band. It's going to have Robbie Lynn and Vin Gordon. If you know anything about ska and reggae, you know who those guys are. So, I mean, Robbie and that – I mean, Robbie – Ricky and Adam, I don't know, are you guys reggae fans, Max Romeo fans? Joe Strummer was a Max Romeo fan and used to cover Quarter Pound of Icehead live, I think on his last tour.
You know, I checked out some of the tracks that were on the story here, but I have never been into reggae. I mean, I don't hate it. I just feel like it can get monotonous and kind of repetitive, and I just have never gotten into the genre that much, so I'm skipping this respectfully.
Ricky, you need to dive into some Lee Scratch Perry productions, man. Reggae is a wonderful world of soul, of whimsy, of weirdness. Reggae is where it is at. Adam White, you got a take on this?
Yeah, I'm into this. I'm into this. I'm into this artist. I'm into this, you know, this style. I mean, my reggae relationship is a little bit odder, only because like I came into a lot of it from the ska perspective, and that's kind of like that's colored a lot of what I grasped onto and what I was listening to. And you know, any of this kind of like any of the guys that were recording with Scratch Perry, any of the stuff that was in the, you know, out of that kind of 70s era that was happening concurrent with punk, I appreciate a lot of that stuff a lot more than I do anything that's modern in it. Like the whole kind of like dance hall influence on reggae these days is not really my cup of tea. The lack of a lot of live instrumentation in a lot of modern reggae, I'm not super into, but yeah, but this is the kind of stuff that I am. So,
well, listen, the Pope's in town this week, so let's play a song about destroying the devil in honor of the Pope. This is a classic Max Romeo cut called Chase the Devil. And if you're feeling adventurous, seek out the Lee Scratch Perry version of this track called Disco Devil. But we're going to play the original just in case you haven't heard it. This is Max Romeo, produced by Lee Scratch Perry, doing Chase the Devil.
Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm going to chase you out of earth. Shirt and chase the devil out of earth. slip a gun with him hand. I'm gonna put on a iron shirt and chase Satan out of earth. I'm gonna put on a iron shirt and chase the devil out of earth. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space.
All right, we are back. If anyone wants to send us an email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. Don't write us to complain about the redesign of punknews.org. You can complain about that in the comment section.
Directly on the website itself.
Yeah. Complain directly on the website by all means, but don't complain to us about that. This show will be up on Sunday. I encourage you to go check out the articles that we're posting with these shows on Punk News, because we're trying to beef them up, and given the new layout and everything, I'm gonna try to go all out with this one. So we'll see how cool we can make these podcast articles when they go up. But yeah, that's it. So yeah, listen to this. Go listen to that episode of Everything in the Kitchen Sink that we guest on, because it was super fun.
Adam, we should do an article about that. I don't think we did.
Well, we didn't. I'm waiting for her to get everything up on iTunes, so it's everywhere. It wasn't when I checked earlier. So hopefully, and yeah, that's it. The show is over. Go home.